three drunk motherfuckers. Yeah, it's the Licks. We got Stan the Guitar Man in the house.
Okay, what's up guys? Welcome to the Movie Pub. This is the final episode of the year. We're breaking down the December movies. My name is Mike Auger, and my partner, as always, is the one and only Zombie Greg.
How are you doing?
And the one and only E-Bob, Robert Escalante.
Hey, what's up?
Robert, you got two beers going. Tell us what we're drinking. And we're here live from Placentia, California, in the Meetup Barbecue. It's off of Kramer Boulevard and... what's the other cross street?
Couldn't even tell you.
Anyhow, it's off Kramer.
Owned by Lewis
Come
the Viking.
Check it out. Owned by Lewis the Viking. He's going to be doing the Fanboys and Leash show with me next week. Come check it out. Great food, great beer, as always. E-Bob, take it away.
So I'm double fisting already. My first beer is the El Segundo Big Dawn. It's a pretty strong double IPA. It's 8.9%, and it actually drinks like a single. It's nice and crisp, very hoppy, so it's a pretty good beer. The other beer I got in my hand is a Bottle Logic Brewing Company beer. That's actually on special release that I have no idea how Lewis the Viking got, but here it is in my hand. It's called Frogger GLC. It was just released either last night or today, and he already has it. I haven't cracked it open yet, but as soon as I do, I will let you guys know how it tastes.
You say he always gets, like, rare beers, right? Like,
he does. I mean, especially from Bottle Logic. There's just about everything I've seen from him, like... maybe like 75, if not more, percent like of what I've seen that he gets from Bottle Logic is all stuff that I've never seen outside of the brewery.
So you say you were there at one place and they sold out quick as fuck and he's got it here?
Well, these cans right, that I have in my hand, the Frogger GLC, it sold out in like maybe 10 to 15 minutes at the most. It sold out quick online. And I actually have a friend that's at the brewery right now picking up his cans, and I'm just sitting here grabbing it like, who is this joint? So, cheers, Emil.
Yeah, Greg, what do you got?
I'm actually trying out the Bootleggers Rocco's Red Ale. It's an American Amber, 7.1% ABV, 36 IBU, and that's, I guess it's breweries in Fullerton. Bob's not a huge fan of it, but I like it. It's pretty smooth. It's got a little bit of combo of hoppiness and maltiness, and I don't know, it goes down pretty smooth to me. I got a little bit hooked on the Red Ales a couple weeks back at a brewery in Riverside called Thompson, so... give it a shot. This one's actually pretty tasty to me.
And I got the Bottle Logic Zero Sweet or Suit.
Oh, how is that? I haven't tried it.
Try it out. 7% alcohol. It's a very good beer. I like it.
Interesting. It's good though.
Bob gets paid by Bottle Logic to say that.
I do like Bottle Logic. But...
so we got a bunch of other things to try out, but... before we jump into the December movies, a lot of big trailers came out, so we're going to break those down right now. First trailer we'll be talking about here. Did you watch the trailer for Gringo?
Yeah, I did.
You didn't watch that,
no.
But we'll talk about that. What'd you think?
I mean, I'm not, like, super-duper curious. It looks maybe entertaining.
I think it looks funny.
It looks interesting. I'll go that far. I mean, it looks a little bit silly, to be honest, but it could be entertaining.
Sicario 2, Soldado. You've already seen it, so we won't get you in trouble with your NDA sign.
Yep.
I think this looks fucking fantastic.
This trailer made my dick hard.
Yes.
For sure. The first Sicario was fucking awesome.
Right.
Especially that ending. So it made you want to watch more of it, and I'm so happy they're making a second one.
I was super duper excited when I got a chance to see like a screen of that one, dude.
Yeah.
It doesn't disappoint, I'll just say that.
Well, dude, so usually like when they make a sequel of something, usually my first reaction is going, oh fuck, why did they make a sequel of this? You know, it's like, you just automatically go, it's not going to be as good as the first one. Especially with a great movie like Sicario. But this one, like I said, I feel like there was more story to be told after the first one, so... I'm really happy that they actually made this film. I feel like this was a film that needed to be made.
For the second one, they actually hired a new screenwriter, and I forget what his name is, but it's the same guy that did Hell or High Water and Wind River.
Okay.
He just directed, he directed Wind River too.
I heard that's a great movie. I haven't seen it yet.
I actually really enjoy that movie.
Okay.
So he wrote this, dude, and he took it up a notch.
Really
so,
excited about that.
The Nutcracker in the Four Realms.
To be honest, I thought it looked pretty good.
Honestly,
you know what I think looks like shit is Wrinkle in Time. I think this looks 20 times better than Wrinkle
in
Time.
Which, by the way, I didn't even put that on here, but another trailer came out for that, and I agree with you.
Yeah, so
I think it's going to be all spectacle, and that's it. Because the Oprah Winfrey, that throws the whole thing off for me, dude. Peter Jackson's doing a new epic called The Mortal Engines. It kind of looks like Mad Max.
That's exactly what I thought.
Meets Transformers.
I thought Mad Max. To be honest, just off of that little teaser trailer, I didn't get any excited at all.
Yeah, and then on the trailer, right when it shows Peter Jackson, I was like, okay, 4 hours long.
Yeah. Annihilation.
I'm intrigued.
It's like Alien meets The Arrival.
Something
meets
like
Jurassic Park.
That's what scares me is this comes out in February.
Yeah.
I will say this, though. I mean, the writer, Villanueva or whatever, the director, I mean, this is what he's good at, dude.
So I think
he's directing this?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Knowing that, and I think Natalie Portman's a great actress, and I'm intrigued. I'll watch it. I'm curious. I'm not going to throw my judgments out, but the trailer has me intrigued.
Again, Villanueva. So that kind of, to me, like, even though I might have been a little apprehensive about it, I was like, all right,
He hasn't failed me yet.
No, he hasn't.
Ready Player One. This is a Steven Spielberg movie. It's got every fucking...
I think it's a great concept.
Horror or video game, like...
This is kind of like, to me, like a non-kind of anime version of, like, Wreck-It Ralph, kind of, where they throw a bunch of things from different categories all into one movie.
Yeah.
And, I almost lost my shit when I saw Freddy Krueger in the trailer, dude. But they have a lot of different things that thrown into one movie, and it's Spielberg, right?
Yes.
You know Spielberg doesn't really fuck movies up, dude.
Have you seen the game?
Well, besides when they raped Indiana Jones, yeah. But... For the most part, though, he's Steven Spielberg, dude. So, I'm gonna have probably high reserve for this movie.
I'm really looking forward to this. I think it looks fantastic.
Yeah.
Like you said, this is based on a novel, though, if I'm not mistaken.
I think that's correct.
That's orange juice?
It's supposed to be a hazy New England IPA. All you guys try them, hit it.
James Cameron's new movie, Alita: Battle Angel. Now, apparently, this is also based on
a comic book or whatever.
Comic book or a manga.
Holy shit. Is it that good?
Jesus Christ, dude.
It is pretty
strong.
Have
you tried that?
No, I've never tried it. They just released it like last night or this morning.
Holy shit, dude. I've had strong IPAs before. That's probably the strongest one I've ever had.
This is actually probably worth a triple, so.
So by the time we're doing top 10, he's gonna be fucked up.
Man. I haven't even had breakfast or lunch yet.
He's been preparing for this all week, dude.
What do you think about Alita, though?
To be honest, to me, I'm not very interested, but you can't deny that it's Cameron, and they have an all-star cast for this, dude.
Yeah, it's James Cameron. It looks good, but movies like this, I just feel like I've seen it before. Like, I feel like I've seen this time and time again.
My fear with this movie is it's going to be like Ghost in the Shell.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Exactly. This reminded me of Ghost in the Shell.
Me too.
So, it kind of reminds me of Ghost in the Shell, maybe a little bit of Ex Machina.
I don't want to get my hopes up for this because Ghost in the Shell let me down so much, dude.
That was an okay movie. It wasn't shitty.
No, but I was expecting it to be...
You see what I'm saying?
This is definitely on the rougher side.
Yeah.
It's very strong and you can't
get
around
it. Okay, so Bob takes a sip of it and says, oh shit, you know that there's something.
Yeah, I know.
Dude, try this.
It really is Spiked OJ. It's like, I like that.
It's not bad.
It's not bad, it's just strong.
It's got a good after effect, though. It hits you after.
There's some citrus in there,
all the haziness and the fruit that they throw in there, I think.
Holy crap,
what's
the percentage is this thing?
It's 11%.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that's super high for an IPA.
Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom trailer. I think this looks fucking terrible.
That looks fucking horrible, dude.
I think it looks awesome.
Oh my god.
Jesus Christ.
I think it looks great.
It's like, what worked in the first film? Let's get them in the rolling ball again.
Right.
Let's get the T-Rex saving the day again.
Right. Like, so pretty much the...
I'm interested.
Throughout all the Jurassic Park films, the T-Rex is the protagonist. Like, he's always been. They try to make him out like he's a villain, but he's not. He's always saving the day. This looks stupid, dude. It looks fucking stupid. They need to kill this franchise. I wish this wave would crack. So dumb. Matt's a big Jurassic Park fan. What does he think of this?
I never really got his take on this
trailer.
Oh, my
God. Yeah, I saw this on Thursday Night Football.
I'd say this is one of the better trailers I've seen for 2018.
Oh, my God.
Last trailer is what I'm going to get to here. Avengers Infinity War.
Just really? Kidding. It looks epic.
Yeah.
I don't know a lot of the lore, so a lot of the questions I had to run by Mike.
We've been waiting for this for, like, what, 5 years?
At least. I mean, really since Avengers 1.
Yeah, the first time they teased Thanos was Avengers 1. So what was that, 5 years ago?
I think so, yeah.
So we've been waiting for this moment in time for 5 years, dude. We finally got it. I'm just waiting now.
I'm going to make a prediction here. I think Pepper Potts is going to die in this.
Who? Peppermint Potts?
Tony Stark's girlfriend, Gwyneth Paltrow. I think she's going to be in the Iron Man rescue armor, because that's what she is in the comics. I think Thanos is going to kill her. That's the person Tony Stark's holding.
What did you think of Thanos in this?
It grew on me more when I saw it on the big screen versus on my phone.
I don't like him without the armor.
I wish he had the armor, for sure.
Yeah.
Those leaked scenes that I saw him taking one of the Infinity Stones from the Collector.
Yeah.
We know he rips the stone out of the Vision's head. Obviously, they're going to have to show him CG'ing... God damn it, what's the name of the planet that the,
Asgard?
Not Asgard,
For Nova Corps?
No, the planet the Nova Corps is on.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's gonna have to siege that planet, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And that'll be interesting to see what happens in the first part of this, because, it is a lot that he's gonna need to do to kind of get everything in line, and then, basically...
Yeah, and I think in the trailer it kind of revealed a lot. Like, if you look at his stones and the stone he's missing, I think that's going to...
In the official trailer, he's only got 2 stones in the gauntlet.
But it shows more throughout the one, and the only stone that hasn't shown, I think they're going to reveal that in the Black Panther movie.
The Soul Stone is the only one we haven't seen yet.
Which I think is going to be in Black Panther, because that's the only movie...
For sure, I'm almost 100% positive that's in Wakanda.
Well, we'll see. But... Yeah, I think it looks good. It's just...
Because that's what's going to bring him to Earth. It's not just going to be him, like... Xandar. That's the planet Nova Corps is from. Because he's got to go to Xandar to get 1 stone. Obviously, he shows up at the end of Ragnarok, and he's going to kill all the Asgardians and take that stone. You've got Doctor Strange has a time gem.
Right.
And that's in the Sanctorum in New York. I think the Soul Stone is going to be on Wakanda, and then what's the stone I'm missing here?
Tesseract?
That was in Asgard. No, Power Stone. Power Stone's in Xandar. If the other one's in Wakanda, that means there's three on Earth, because the Vision's got the other one.
The Vision, and then what's his face? Doctor Strange.
Yeah, and then Wakanda. And you got Xandar and
Asgard. This film shows Vision.
It's 5 stones.
Vision
in
human form, doesn't it?
Yes, but he's using the Mind Stone to create that illusion.
Is that because he has his relationship with Scarlet Witch?
Yeah, which he does in the comics.
Right.
So
they have kids in the comics.
Yeah. I'm stoked for this. I hope he delivers on what we're expecting.
It looks like your typical Avengers movie.
Yeah, but well,
like you're trying to go too far.
This is a problem with this movie. If it doesn't, the last 10 years have been a waste. So they have to. And actually, I read an article where they interviewed Kevin Feige, and he said Thanos will do something in the first, like, he said 5 or 10 minutes of this film that will leave no doubt in your mind that this is the biggest and baddest villain you've ever seen on the screen.
It's probably him killing Asgard, my guess.
We'll see what happens.
All right, let's jump into these assemblies and, right now. So we'll start it off with the Disaster Artist. Me and Ebob saw this together, actually, and we were fucking getting drunk.
Every time I looked down at an empty drink, Mike was coming with a full one.
Yeah. It wasn't planned out that way, but that's how it turned out.
Yeah, right.
What'd you think?
You know what? It's extremely hilarious to me that this is actually based on a true story.
Yeah.
At the end of the movie, they do like kind of like the side by side scenes of like the actual portrayal, and then like James Franco doing the portrayal.
Yeah.
Dude, James Franco was spot on almost.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, it was that bad of a movie.
He said, too, like, I saw an interview with James Franco with, what's the guy's name? Tommy
Wiseau.
Wiseau, yeah. He said, they're like, how much of this movie is accurate? He's like, oh, I'd say about 90%. And then James Franco's all, because he had sunglasses on, like, during the interview. And he's all, he goes, yeah, he goes, you know what the other 10% was? He's all, we're watching the screen, Tommy's like, oh, I don't think you got the lighting right. He's all, that's because you're wearing your glasses instead of the movie theater.
I laughed my fucking ass off. But the different perspective here is between me and Bob, I've seen The Room.
Right.
So, especially when they start filming this thing,
yeah,
is where it really took off for me, dude.
Oh, there's so many great shots in The Room, though.
Yeah, like, I love the scene where fucking Seth Rogen goes to cash a check.
That was so funny!
He's like, he's expecting it to bounce. He's like, here, just try to cash it.
So he cashes it, right? And the guy starts giving him his money. He's like, wait, really? The check cleared? He's like, oh, yeah. Dude, this guy's like a bottomless pit of money. Nobody knows where he got his money.
No, they still
don't.
Nobody
knows how old he is.
They still
Nobody
don't.
Really knows where he's from.
I know.
He might be from Sweden, but yeah, Nobody really knows.
He's one of the most mysterious men in the world.
And I actually caught on to that because I had no idea about The Room before I watched this movie. And I actually asked Mike during the movie because I had no idea. I was like, hey, where's this guy from? Is he like Asian or what is he?
He's like, yeah, where are you from? I told you, I'm from New Orleans.
Yeah. And this was before like anything came up in the film. I was like, what the fuck is this guy?
They still don't, dude. They still ask him.
He goes to pick up the son and his buddy who's like, I don't know, 20.
Yeah.
And the mom comes out of the house to meet him.
Yeah.
She goes, excuse me, how old are you? He's like, oh, I'm his age. Dude. She's like, oh, really? Well, I just turned 14. He's like, oh, happy birthday.
You know, he kind of reminded me of fucking Chitara.
Oh, dude, 100%.
He's so, like, nonchalant about these questions, too.
Yeah.
Like,
and dude, it's just so
funny.
Because
he put, like, $6 million of his own money into this movie.
Yeah, right? Dude. But they kind of tease this, like, you kind of question if he's in love with Greg something.
Yeah, yeah. Name.
Greg Beneer or some shit like that.
Well, you know, I wouldn't say love from what I saw in the movie, in like this film anyways. I wouldn't say love. He seemed like a lonely guy. And
he was his only friend.
He found companionship in this guy.
Right.
You know? I wouldn't call it gay or anything.
They kind of teased that a little bit, I would say.
I didn't get that. I just think it was more of a companionship thing because he was alone and he had no one other than this guy.
Right.
Let's cheers to Tommy.
Yeah. Hey, Tommy.
There's actually, like, kind of, I don't want to say you get inspiration from this, but there is kind of a endearing quality if you think about what this guy did to try to like make his dreams come true.
Yeah.
And you don't know where he got his money and shit, but the fact that he put $6 million into this and it's so bad that it's hilarious.
Right.
And I thought, you know, when they showed the standing ovation at the screening at the end of the movie,
uh-huh,
I thought that was bullshit. Then they showed a real video from the screening, and he did get a standing ovation.
Yeah.
But it's because everybody was laughing
it's
so hard.
It's a cult classic now. Like, I heard, like, when people go see The Room in, like, theaters now, like,
sold out.
And,
well,
like,
they said that at the end of the film, like, in the credits or whatever.
Yeah.
So, like, every time they show this movie, like, in a theater, it always sells out.
And then they're saying, like, every time it shows, like, the pictures in the background of the plastic spoons, everybody throws spoons at the screen. there's, like, things that they do now that make it, like a cult classic film. That's pretty cool.
Greg Sestero, that's his name. Anyhow.
That's played by Dave Franco, right?
Yeah. I thought he was okay. If I could find a weak point in this film, it would definitely be him. But Franco is damn near masterful as Tony Saw, dude.
Right.
What'd you think of both Franco's performances?
I mean, I like both. James Franco, he's almost like Tommy.
Right.
Like, it's almost like indecipherable.
Right.
So I thought he did a way better job. And little Franco, Dave Franco,
yeah,
I thought he did a great job too. I mean, I really did enjoy the movie. It was very entertaining. There's nothing special about it.
Right.
But it's a very entertaining movie and I laughed my ass off.
Going back to the Francos, since Dave Franco started acting, James has been asking him to be in his movies the entire time he's been an actor, and he's always said no.
Well, he's part like the frat pack dude, kind of, whether he wants
well,
to be or not.
Well, he wanted to go off and do his own thing. Well, and he's like, he didn't want to have to ride on the coattails of his brother.
Yeah.
But this one is the first movie he actually said, yes, this movie makes sense.
But the thing is that, like, Franco is still in the movie with all of James's friends, so he's always with Seth Rogen. He's always with fucking Danny McBride.
Right.
Maybe you're right, not together with him.
Right.
But he's part of the frat pack, whether he wants to admit or not.
Yeah.
The Zac Efron scene had me cracking up, too.
Oh, I didn't know
that was him?
Yeah.
I didn't know that was him.
I was cracking up, dude.
Oh, man, I gotta see this movie when it comes out.
I really fucking enjoyed it. We were laughing the entire time.
Yeah.
I think it's the best comedy of the year, except for maybe Logan Lucky.
That was good.
Real close, dude.
That was good.
What are you scoring this?
I'll give it 7.
I'm giving it 8.5. I really enjoyed this film a lot. It's probably the funniest movie of the year. Bullethead.
Yeah, I checked out Bullethead. That's starring... It is starring...
Antonio Banderas.
Antonio Banderas. It's starring Adrian Brody.
John Malkovich.
John Malkovich and Rory Culkin. That's basically the whole cast. There's a couple other people in between. A lot of things I really liked about the film. I think that the story is pretty unique. There is a little parts of some downtime in between, because basically the premise of the story is there's an abandoned warehouse that they used to do illegal dogfighting in there, basically put on by what I'm pretty sure is the mob. And Adrian Brody, John Malkovich, and Rory Culkin just did a heist, and they're on the run, and their car breaks down because their driver just got shot, so it looks like they were getting shot at by the police. So they go and hide in this warehouse, and they're supposed to be having a van come pick them up. And inside the warehouse, they end up discovering that there's a dog still left in there that basically... And there's cops that are on the outside of the building, so they can't really leave the building.
So this is like Cujo?
Dude, this... To me, this was a modern-day Cujo film in a warehouse. Because this dog is fucking gnarly, dude.
Oh, shit.
It's got bites and shit all over him. It's a huge pit bull. And the way that they show, like, their opening shot of the movie is from the dog's perspective.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
So it's in an elevator, and you see, like, Antonio Banderas, and it's the dog, so you see the chain. And they open up the elevator doors, and you hear, like, this crowd going, and they're walking the dog out. And you see from the dog's point of view that there's two other dogs going, like trying to go. And they let the dogs go, and you just see it going. And then it cuts out, and the next shot is a puddle of blood, and you just see the dog's reflection in the puddle of blood.
Yeah.
That's the opening scene of the movie. So I'm like, what the fuck?
Is this PG-13?
No, this is very rated R. Very rated R. So they're in this building, and they're talking, and they're hiding out. Rory Culkin's kind of like a little bitch, and he's got a heroin problem. He's a big junkie, so... He ends up wandering off because he wants to go and shoot up somewhere, and he goes into this locker room, and you just see him freeze and just start like staring down one of the lockers, and then Adrian Brody and John Malkovich walk in, and they see him just staring, and when they walk over, they see just the complete mauled head-to-toe body sitting there with blood everywhere, and you just see the dog staring at him. That's the first entrance of seeing what this actual beast is. So then it starts chasing him, starts terrorizing him, and in between them hiding from the dogs, they're telling their own personal stories. And it basically, there's two different things in the movie. So it's what's happening in the warehouse, and then flashbacks. And every flashback they're talking about has some type of thing that has to do with a story that happens with the dog. So there's a lot of emphasis on the dog in this movie, but basically, Rory Culkin ends up ODing. He tells his story about his dog and how his dad's abusive and all this stuff. So he shoots up and ODs while he's in there. John Malkovich ends up getting killed. And then Antonio Banderas shows up at the very end because they end up finding a thing of money in there that from the dog fighting. So they're like, oh shit, this is a huge score. So they take it. Well, Antonio Banderas shows up right as they're trying to leave and starts shooting them all up and stuff. And there was a scene earlier in the movie where the dog's chasing Adrian Brody, and it gets pinned underneath something. So Adrian Brody could have just left the dog there. He's like, no, that's fucked up. So he ends up lifting the thing off the dog and saves him. The dog runs off. So the ending was a little predictable. As he's getting in a scuffle with Antonio Banderas, Antonio Banderas tells the dog to go and kill Adrian Brody, and it turns on Antonio Banderas and kills him. And he shoots the dog, so all three of them are kind of laying there like dying at the end of the movie. But then Adrian Brody, it shows him like on the beach with like his wife at the end, so he ends up getting away, which is kind of predictable. The cool thing about the how they utilize the dog fighting thing was kind of cool, because they see, before you even see the dog, they see written on the wall a huge bracket, and all the dog's names are American actors' names. This dog's name was De Niro. And you just see De Niro on from the very beginning of the bracket all the way down to the very end where he's the last one, and it's a huge bracket. So basically, he's killed hundreds of dogs. They even find a room where you just see piles and piles of like dog bodies. But what I thought was cool was all the proceeds to this movie, or any money this movie makes, goes to going against dog fighting, which is kind of cool. So all in all,
by Michael Vick.
All in all, I thought it was a pretty entertaining movie. I was entertained. The cinematography is fantastic in this movie. Like I said, there's a little bit of pacing issues when they're not being chased by the dog, but I give it a 7. I love Adrian Brody. I love John Malkovich. So I liked it. I thought it was good.
I'm not going to go in order on this one, too. I'm going to save two movies for the end.
I wonder which one.
So, I think I saw 3 movies that you guys didn't see. So I'll get one out of the way that I don't have a lot to say about. This is Ferdinand, which is the...
I don't know what the fuck that is.
It's an animated movie about a bull.
John
Cena's a voice actor.
Okay.
My kids liked it. That's all I can ask for, but it's a pretty bland animated movie. A couple of decent spots here and there, but I'll give it a 6. The Greatest Showman. Just watched this last night with my wife.
Did you enjoy it as much as she did?
My wife fucking loved this movie because it has everything she loves. It's a musical, it's eye candy, it's dance numbers, it's catchy poppy songs.
Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, eye candy.
She said eye candy.
Zac Efron and Hugh Jackman.
Oh, yeah.
So, but for me, first of all, when I think about the circus, I think about the exploitation of deformed human beings and beating the shit out of elephants.
Right.
What fucked up head do you have?
Damn. So,
I think of like elephants and peanuts.
I feel like kind of like
I'm
a sugar-coated version of P.T. Barnum
right,
in this.
Right.
And it's supposed to be in the 1800s. All the songs are like pop songs, and there's people like clapping along, like this, dancing
with
people.
I hate that.
They're ahead of their time.
Might be a fucking Knight's Tale. You know
because,
what I mean?
Yeah,
they're ahead of their time.
When movies do that, it takes you out of the element.
That being said, I mean, there's some catchy tunes for sure. Great dance choreography. I have no problems there. Hugh Jackman's great in the film. The acting's great all the way around. I don't think there's a bad actor in this film. But it's a questionable way to put this on screen when you're telling this story, in my opinion. I don't think it works well for the story they're trying to tell. I did look up P.T. Barnum's history. By all accounts, he was a good guy. Tried to help people.
You tried to debunk the movie.
I did, because I was like, there's no way this guy was a shit guy, right? You know, but I began to get bored with it, and I felt like it just was kind of a rat or a hamster on a wheel. Like, it wasn't really going anywhere, and it felt predictable and bland at points.
Yeah.
It's not a horrible film. I didn't hate myself for watching it, but it's not something I don't feel like I need to watch again.
So it's the La La Land, basically, is what you're saying.
No, La La Land was way better. 5 out of 10.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Yikes.
The last movie that I saw is for sure, without a question, the surprise of the fucking year.
Wow.
That's Jumanji.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but great stuff.
I really like this movie, dude. I was shocked. Now, is it this movie that's like groundbreaking and thought-provoking? No, it's just dumb fun.
Of course not.
But this is a movie, by the trailer, the first time I saw this, I thought this was going to be one of the worst movies of the year.
I think everybody did.
Yeah.
It's not, dude. It's not even close. It's a really, really good time.
I mean, the rating on Rotten Tomatoes on this is high.
Yeah.
It's like in the high 80s.
Every review of this thing has been great, dude.
Deserves it. So, these kids... And they do pay homage to the original Jumanji, which I thought it was done respectfully and tastefully. So the board game gets found in the beginning by this kid in like 1996. Takes a board game, is like, fuck this. Well, it morphs into a video game. All this kid did was play video games and listen to Metallica. Puts the game
Metallica
in.
Metallica, Guns N' Roses.
Metallica.
Yeah.
Puts the game in. He disappears. So it morphs into whatever is the end thing at that point. these four kids, who are all pretty good actors for the most part, get detention, and they find this game in there and dust it off, put it in, and then they get sucked into the game. What was really cool about it is all these actors were like, they were acting kind of out of their shell, like opposite to what they normally act. Like The Rock was kind of playing this puss.
Jack Black's
playing this nerdy girl. Jack Black was by far the best thing this whole movie did. Kevin Hart is the only one that just plays Kevin Hart. There's no difference there. He's doing the same shtick he does in every movie. The villain seemed a little generic, but I appreciated the storytelling, how it felt like it was a video game. Like, you're talking to the NPCs, non-playable characters, and they only have specific answers to what you ask them.
Yeah.
If you ask them something different, they'll just repeat the same shit over and over.
That's what I heard. I heard there's, like, life bars and shit.
Yeah.
And like...
So, me being, like, an old-school gamer, too, I really appreciated that part of it.
Right.
The action's great. I like the choreography a lot in this. Mm. I can't give it, like, a 9 or a 10 because, like I said, it's pretty baseline as far as the storytelling goes. It doesn't necessarily bring anything new to the table or anything that I can say really sticks out to me, but I had a hell of a time in this movie. 8 out of 10. I really liked it, man.
Yeah. You know what? That's still a win for this franchise, this movie, whatever you want to call it, because, like Greg mentioned, like, everyone thought this was going to be a fucking shipwreck, dude.
Yeah. And, I did, for sure.
And to be even close to, like, the 90% percentile, you gotta be fucking, like, just, like, praying to the gods and, like, swimming in money like Scrooge McDuck, dude.
I agree. So I got a fresh beer here, and it's the Bottle Logic 714 Blonde Ale. 4.8%. I think I've had this before here.
You might have. This is, like, the most generic beer that Bottle Logic does.
So why'd you let me get this?
Because I know you like generic beer.
Well, whatever. Let's talk about the Shape of Water. Let's start with you, Greg.
Well, this movie takes place in Baltimore in the 1960s, right in the middle of the Cold War with Russia. And this movie revolves...
Cold War 70s.
Well, this is the 90s.
It's right before the Cold War.
Okay, so yeah, right before the Cold War. But this movie revolves a lot around being outcasts. Especially around this time, the main character, I can't remember the girl's name in the movie, but she's basically, she's got like three scars like on each side of her neck, and she's mute, so she uses sign language to communicate. Her roommate is basically kind of like a closet homosexual. Her best friend, who works with her at this government facility, they're both basically... Eliza, there you go. They're both custodians, or like janitors, kind of, and they have special access to different parts of this facility. And her best friend is black, so all of, basically the main characters in this movie are all kind of outcasts at this point in time. And they end up... Michael Shannon is works at this facility, and he brings back a amphibian kind of man thing that he finds in South America. And in South America, they kind of worship this thing as a god and bring him into this facility. And he kind of has a complex because at this time white males were the number one, so he kind of, I think, has a complex with him. So he kind of tortures him and beats him and things like that, which I actually found out too, that this is Guillermo del Toro's like most personal film. Which, I love Guillermo del Toro as a director. I think he's one of the best creature creators in cinema right now.
Sure.
And he's always wanted to do like a Creature from the Black Lagoon type film, and this was kind of his love letter to that. And they actually, I found out Universal actually offered him the job to do Creature from the Black Lagoon for the Dark Universe, and he turned it down so he can make this film. Which is probably a good thing, because I think that the Dark Universe is done.
Correct.
So, but anywho, so as Eliza keeps, she discovers this creature, she develops a friendship with him, and, oh, before that, I forgot, Michael Shannon, due to him being aggressive towards the creature, ends up biting, I think, two of his fingers off, and she ends up developing a friendship with this creature and ends up showing him sign language and things like that. And it almost, it kind of develops into like a romance. And she finds out that Michael Shannon wants to kill the creature and do an autopsy on it to learn more about it. So when she finds that out, her along with her friend at work and her roommate decide to make a plan to sneak the creature out of the building and keep it at her apartment in her bathtub. So they do, and it's successful, and Michael Shannon ends up questioning all the employees who does this, and he basically kind of just passes them off because he's like, there's no way these two could ever develop a plan like this. So
just fucking stupid.
Right. So ends up passing them up, and you find out later on the creature has kind of healing abilities. So he ends up, like, her roommate's balding, and he ends up making hair grow on his head, and his skin turns all blue and glows. And Michael Shannon ends up getting word. It comes back around after he blames the Russians first for stealing them out of there.
So let's save that for the end.
Okay.
Robert, what'd you think of this?
I enjoyed the movie. If you go off of like kind of like the ratings that you see on Rotten Tomatoes, to me, I didn't feel it was like that great.
No.
Because I mean, they're like 94-95%, which means like it's flawless.
Right.
And to me, like, I'm not going to say that I had issues with it, just maybe not my cup of tea. Like, there's a part in the movie where like the girl breaks into like a song and dance, you know, and watches fantasizing. And I was just like, what the fuck does this have to do with the movie?
Well, the fucking movie starts out, and like the first, I swear to God, I feel like the first 15 minutes was just her boiling eggs and fucking banging herself in the bathtub.
Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck's going on here?
Right.
I'll say this. Michael Shannon in this film is one of the most despicable, vile human beings on the face of the earth.
Let me say something about Michael Shannon. Every time I see him, I would just want to punch his face off. So, I think he plays like a great villain in anything that he does.
Yeah.
Because I've seen him in Boardwalk Empire, I've seen him in Man of Steel, this, a couple other ones that I can't think of.
Yeah.
But like, he's just, something about him, just you don't like him.
Right.
So he plays like an epic villain, whatever he does.
Mm-hmm. You know, and then the storyline with the roommate, I get what they're trying to do here. They're trying to connect all these outcasts, and especially in that period. It's a kind of a period piece and more of a commentary on the way things were back then.
Right.
There's some scenes in this where I don't know how necessary it was to the narrative, and then some things are hard for me to buy. Like, she's going into this room, feeding this creature eggs all the time, and then you see that they have all these security cameras around, but he doesn't suspect anything. That doesn't make any sense to me, you know what I mean?
The way they established their friendship just felt like they didn't explain it enough to me, I guess. She just one day, for some reason, showed up and gave him an egg.
Sure.
Like, nothing else. Like, she, nothing else.
And then the fish sex, I mean, this chick gets naked a lot in this film.
Yeah. Well, I think to that extent, I think that this girl has been so, just been a peon to everybody that's involved in her life for so long that she's kind of given up on humanity.
And the first thing that shows her any sort of attention, she kind of just goes with.
Yeah, I think she recognizes that this guy is, this creature is also being treated as an outcast. So she looks at him with wonder and intrigued, and she's curious about him. And he sees her as a different type of human that's not... A, she's not worshipping him, and B, she's not acting hostile towards him either.
They kind of try to drop some hints that maybe she's a fish creature too. The scars on her neck.
Right.
They found her in the river.
Right.
As a baby. So I thought that was going to go somewhere, and it didn't.
Well,
I didn't pick up on that really.
Yeah, but I mean, the ending kind of.
Are you led to believe she's dead, or that she lived in the sea with him?
No, I think she comes to find out at the end of the movie.
She's a fish creature too.
That he really is an actual god, and he basically turns her into be able to be aquatic, and so they end up.
That's what I got out of it.
Yeah, they live together at the end. I thought that the ending was beautiful. I thought it was fantastic.
The acting's very, very good. The cinematography is great. It just, I felt like at the points it felt sluggish and it felt longer than it needed to be.
It's a 2-hour movie.
Yeah, it felt longer though, in my opinion.
I have nothing against the film other than the fact that I don't think it's worth a 95% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. That's it though. I mean, I enjoyed the film. I thought it was, for the most part, very good. At times you laugh. At times, kind of like Greg says, it's, you know, almost you want to cry. Maybe not to that extent, but you know.
Goddamn, that part though where that Russian gets shot in the face and he fucking puts that finger
I cringe, dude.
There's a lot of things in Guillermo del Toro's films that he doesn't hold back. If you've ever seen Pan's Labyrinth and you see the guy's face get caved in with a wine bottle.
As soon as he fucking reached in, I was like, oh.
Yeah. You know, and then at least he gets his comeuppance at the end. Gets his throat slashed and you see him like fucking dying on the ground.
Yeah.
It's pretty brutal. There are definitely some brutal parts when he eats the cat in the apartment.
Yeah.
It's a fine movie though. I mean, I just don't, it's, you know, it's not a top 10 movie for me. 7 for me.
7.5.
I'm going to disagree with both of you. I fucking love this movie.
I knew you would.
I'm going to give it, I thought this was one of Guillermo Toro's best films he's ever made. I think the ending, how it wrapped up everything, was fucking beautiful. I think it kind of solidified the relationship and gave a meaning to both people who didn't have a meaning in life. And I felt like it the cinematography of them in the water at the end was fucking awesome. And I love the acting. I love the storyline. I love the cinematography. I love the creature creation. I think that Guillermo del Toro took a lot of time on this film and was really... took a lot of attention to details. I'm gonna give this film a 9.
No shit.
So you're up there with the rest of the population.
I love it, man. I thought this movie was fucking great, dude.
Well,
what's left?
Time has come. The Last Jedi. Who wants to go first?
I think Bob should go first since he's seen it 3 times.
I'm scared to go first, though.
I've seen it twice.
Okay, well, either one of you guys can go first. I'll just chime in.
Mike, you're right. Paper, scissors, rock?
Yeah, let's do that.
1, 2, and...
All right. Looks like Bob's
go
gone.
First.
All right, so I saw the movie 3 times. The first time I saw it...
Give us a little bit about the story.
So we pick up... right where we left off on The Force Awakens, which is like the first time a Star Wars movie has ever done that. And then, so we pick up, and all the Imperial ships have basically honed in onto where the Resistance ships are. And so they start attacking. And should I go into spoilers? Like full spoilers?
Yeah, full spoilers.
So basically, you know, they start attacking the ships, and they're blowing everyone out of the sky, and... in the midst of that, they blow the bridge? They blow the bridge out, and that's where Leia and all, like, the top generals are, and so...
Save that.
I just asked!
Okay, save that part, because we gotta break this all down.
All right.
Overall thoughts. First time you said you had a different reaction.
I was super duper confused when I walked out the first time. I didn't know how I felt.
Me too.
For a number of different reasons that I won't get into right now. I will later, but right now I won't. But I was super duper confused. I saw it the second time. It kind of confirmed, for the most part, what I thought initially, but I wasn't 100% sure. So, but I thought I knew. I saw it for the third time, and then I absolutely knew how I felt about the film. The film was entertaining. I liked it. I liked the direction that it went through. It went to. I'm not angry at the direction that it went to, because I know a lot of people are, especially like kind of the older generation who want to see the original Star Wars trilogy in the movie theaters, you know, like so our parents.
Yeah.
I'm not mad like them, but I'm not gonna say I'm angry, but I'm very disappointed with some of the things that they did.
I am too.
So
Greg?
Very few things that I like about this film. A lot of things that I fucking pissed off about this film and just don't like.
I'm the opposite. There's a lot of things I liked about this film, but there are a few There are scenes.
I'm on Mike's boat.
There are scenes in this movie that are the best in any Star Wars movie ever.
I think the story overall might be the best one.
Other than the first fight scene.
There are scenes in this movie that are the absolute worst scenes in Star Wars history.
I won't go that far.
I'll tell you one right now.
What?
Fucking Leia flying back like Mary Poppins.
Okay.
To the spaceship.
Sure, fair enough.
This is the worst fucking thing I've ever seen in a Star Wars movie. Awful, dude. Luke milking alien titties.
Unnecessary?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why they show that. Just to show how he's been surviving
Casino
on the island.
Planet plotline?
Pointless.
Awful.
Pointless.
Fucking
not
awful.
Only awful, but pointless, and I hated the fact that, like, while I was watching that scene, I felt like I was being preached to.
Not only that, yeah, it was way too heavy-handed. Not only that, it reminded me of the prequels. Because there was so much CGI. And not even, like, good CGI. Like, I felt like they ran out of the budget right there. That scene,
I felt like they ran out of the budget with CGI and Yoda.
No,
that
was
actually CGI. That's why. That was a puppet.
And
was
they it? Actually...
Yeah. I love that.
Actually, I'm glad that they used, like, the old version Yoda versus, like, the new version Yoda.
And he's batshit crazy Yoda.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I thought he looked different.
Yeah, they used the original version.
Okay.
Because everyone had issues with, like,
the CGI version?
Yeah.
Because I was like, he looks different than he did in the last film.
I don't feel like any of the humor landed in this movie.
I would
it
say
was like 98, Disney humor.
I would say 98% was horrible.
Disney kind of fucked this up.
I agree. I 100% agree.
Either that or Rian Johnson.
No, well...
Well, because now I'm hearing this, though. He wrote this whole film.
I heard that they gave him a lot of freedom.
Yeah. So this is what happens when you don't take control.
But I think... do you guys feel like...
Because I feel like Rian Johnson said, everything you establish in The Force Awakens, fuck you.
Almost. And that's why I walked out so perplexed because he said basically fuck you.
And you respect the direction, and it took a chance. This for sure took more of a chance
than
any other
Star
Wars.
This is the problem when you have, like, let's say trilogies or whatever with different directors.
Exactly.
And you hand off. If there's not a same vision, you're gonna get different results.
Right.
And that's exactly what happened. JJ said this. Ryan said this, and now we're fuck. Where the fuck are we?
Right. Are we going back to JJ?
JJ's back.
So yeah,
and now JJ's got to clean up
between The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi.
JJ has somehow got to bridge what he did in the original and what Ryan did in the middle.
Yeah, because he either has a choice here. He can go off of that, or he can retcon all the shit.
And if he retcons it, I think that's even the bigger cop out than what Ryan did.
Because now he's got to. Do we explain Snoke or do we not?
No.
Do we keep Rey's family as you're just a bunch of junkies that sold you for fucking
Yes.
Business?
I can't stand
because
that.
If he goes back and says otherwise, I'll be even more pissed off than I am right now.
I love all the fan theories though, and they're just like, they're just fucking bums. They sold you for money.
Yeah.
But then
I've heard fan theories too that say, like, well, look at, you know, Luke's, obviously besides Darth Vader, but Luke's parents that he grew up with, he didn't grow up. He kind of grew up like a peasant, you know what I mean?
I will say this, look, I think the theme of the movie, because they say it so many times in different ways, is, you know, I think probably the most, like the most explicit way it's said is by Kylo Ren, it was let the past die.
Yes.
And I think that's the theme of the movie, that Ryan took, like, what you, the Star Wars you knew is over, let it die.
Right.
We're going in a new direction now. And I'm okay with that. What I'm not okay with is they fucking, as JJ, built up that, not necessarily, I don't even know how to say it, but like Rey is someone, basically.
Right.
And Snoke is someone. And then to come back and say that they're fucking worthless. And to wait us 2 years, to make us wait two years for that
why
shit.
Why even tell a story about Snoke's face? He's got the scar right here.
Exactly.
If he's just going to get killed off like
no
that.
No sense.
Now, I thought the first act of this film, until Leia, awesome. The third act, epic. The second act is what kills a lot of this. It's from stopping it from making it one of the best
movies. You thought the third act was epic?
I did, yeah. The second act is where the casino shit happened and all the other
bullshit. Yeah, the casino shit's stupid. I think Benicio del Toro is pretty much the collector.
He was the collector
from the Avengers movies.
Planet Canto Bright or whatever?
Yeah.
Whatever, that is fucking pointless.
Why did they have to throw the girl with the glasses too? The you know what I'm talking about? The little hat? She's from the last one?
Exactly.
Like,
Mas Kanta.
Yeah,
exactly.
Because people like her?
Exactly.
Why did Benicio del Toro talk like Roger Rabbit in this?
Yeah, he did.
I swear to God, I was expecting him to go, please! It's like, dude.
There's so many fucking problems with this movie.
And, then Ryan totally shifted fucking, what's his face? Gleason's character.
Who?
Gleason's character.
Gleason?
Yeah.
Oh, Hux.
Hux. He's a fucking buffoon now.
Yeah.
That's all he is now. Comedy relief.
But I love where they went with Kylo Ren in this story. And Rey.
I like where they went with Kylo.
Awesome in this.
I like where they went with Kylo only because now it's definitive.
Yes.
There's no more questioning where he is on the spectrum.
But they tease that. I like it. You know, I like the force talking between them.
I like the definitive answer as to where he is on that spectrum. Yes, I absolutely love.
There were two dogfights in space that I thought were fantastic. The one that opened the movie, and when Kylo Ren blows up a lot of the ships.
And there's also one of the slowest chase scenes ever. Which is, you know what I'm talking about?
The one that takes place throughout the entire movie?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I get that.
He just shoots a couple lasers every now and then.
But the third act, for me, first of all, the lightsaber fight with the Praetian guards was... Dude, I was cheering in the theater, and so was everybody else.
Okay, so...
I fucking love that,
I saw it the first time, so when that happened, I'm not gonna lie, like... I won't say, like, chills on my spine, but
totally.
I was like...
That's how I felt!
I was like, ooh, like something happened to me.
Yes.
And then... And then, but it died down really quick after that, because then I saw, like... Everywhere we were going after, and everything that happened before that.
John Williams' score in this was significantly better than The Force Awakens, I thought. When they get down on the sand or the salt planet, because they want you to know this isn't Hoth, the face off with Luke Skywalker, dude, again, I got that same feeling. He steps out, and Kylo Ren, I love the way Kylo Ren delivers this. He goes, I want you to have every gun we have to fire on that man. And they're just blasting the shit out of him, dude. He just walks out and goes, brushes his shoulder off.
Again, for me, that's some of the, like, the wasted humor. Like,
yeah, I agree. I love you on that, dude. Yeah. I got the dirt off your shoulder.
And then the showdown, like, you can tell that Ryan Johnson's
that was
influenced
like,
heavily, though.
Like oh, a sitcom, like,
I'm so laughter,
cool.
Right?
I'm so cool.
Yeah.
I loved it. The showdown, though, you can tell Ryan Johnson's heavy.
He should have walked out with like his head down and like just looked up.
It was kind
of like
when Rey gives Luke like finally like gives him like
exactly.
The, he's like, I was like, what?
I hated that.
It's like we waited 2 years for you to do that.
I hated that.
Okay, that's my biggest problem with this
film.
I feel like we waited for all these answers for them just to take a shit on you in this movie. And going back to what you said on the salt planet, okay. Yes, that was cool that they shot Luke and he comes out unscathed. That was fucking cool, right? But then you see the bull standing there and you think, this is it, dude. The lightsaber battle we've all been waiting for, right?
And
they both
pull
it out.
And what happens?
He's a fucking hologram.
I'm not opposed.
There's no battle.
I'm not opposed to that.
I'm indifferent
to it. I'm opposed
to
the no battle part.
First of all, let me just say, you can tell by all the fight scenes in this that he's heavily influenced by like samurai films, especially the way Ren and Luke faced off.
Right.
And you see him digging in the
see their feet sliding
in
the red.
It,
I love that, but that scene could have been so badass.
I'm indifferent to it because Luke wasn't there, but I appreciate it. He was so powerful now. He's floating in the air. And he can project across the universe now.
That obviously killed him.
Kylo didn't need to kill him, but should they have faced off one-on-one with lightsabers?
It would
have
been cool.
Fuck yeah, they should
have.
That's
the moment I wanted to see in The Force Awakens.
Well, we're not
going to
see that now.
It was cool that Rey did, but I wanted to see that.
I was pissed how Luke died, but then again, a lot of people are saying, oh, well, that's kind of how Obi-Wan and something
that's
like
how
Yoda
died.
They just kind of vaporized.
Look, you know what they should have done? And again, maybe this is like the fanboy part of me, but like... Actually, Greg said this earlier. I don't know if you heard it. We're kind of off mic when we said this, but like, there is no other than like the Snoke room scene. There's no lightsaber battle in this film.
There's not.
Except for when Kylo Ren has a flashback. They clash once.
There's a stupid ass fight.
There's
scene.
No lightsaber or no lightsaber film
or
fight in the scene. So when they meet up in fucking the Crystal Planet, whatever it's called. That should have been basically the pinnacle of this movie, dude. And it wasn't. They wasted it. There was nothing. And I'm not going to say that it made it a worse movie because of it. But could it have made it a better movie? Absolutely.
I like Poe Dameron a lot more in this too.
Oh, I like him. I think that it was good they showed him more.
So I didn't understand why Holdo didn't tell Poe Dameron what the plan was. It made no sense. That whole thing led to the casino scene.
Chain of command. That's the only thing I can chop it up to.
That just led to them to go get the MacGuffin.
And Leia's just kind of a bitch to him throughout the whole movie.
Tell me this. That light speed scene, sawing that ship in half, was again one of the best scenes in Star Wars history.
Awesome.
Totally awesome, dude. Okay. That should have been Leia, though, or Akbar.
Okay, let me...
I would have preferred, to be honest, if
they killed off General Akbar, who's one of the most loved characters.
Since now that we're in, like, the full spoilers, if you're gonna blow the bridge out and blow Princess Leia into the space or whatever, just have her close her eyes and blow her out. And especially now that she's, like, actually passed away in
real life. I know, she's the only one left. And she's the only one that's actually dead.
Yeah, so what are you gonna do now?
Yeah, they're gonna CGI her.
No, they said, they could be lying, but they have said that they will not CGI her.
So then they're just gonna write her off.
Okay, and so if we find out that she died, like, in the last 30 years over a fucking Skrull, I might be even more mad.
Like, Poochie went back to his home planet.
Okay, here's another issue I have, dude. Was that a complete unnecessary and stupid decision to bring back Phasma, and then the fight scene was fucking stupid?
Wasted.
Why is she even there?
We don't know.
Is she really dead? Was she really dead this time?
What about BB-8 attacking her with an AT-AT?
Hey, that's actually pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. Dude, there's just so many things in this movie that I just feel like we're so...
There were so many things that were awesome.
Ben should have died.
Yes.
I hate the fact that Rose saved him.
I agree.
Because you know what?
Would have been so much more impactful.
Not only that, but to be honest, from like a character level, he hasn't played that big of a part.
Right.
But if he does that, he'd be like basically like Star Wars legacy, like a hero,
Yeah.
And they saved him at the end with fucking some piece of shit like B character that probably may not make it really an impactful scene like in the next film.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. And then, so answer me this. Hold on. One more question. Maybe you can answer this, or you. You've seen it twice. You've seen it three times. What the fuck is up with the gold dice at the end of the movie?
Oh.
Is that supposed to have some kind of significant
meaning? Yeah, it does.
I understand but in any of the movies before that, have they ever talked about the gold dice?
Falcon chasing was awesome, too.
The way that Han Solo got that ship was that he won it from Lena Carla. I can't talk anymore.
Okay.
Carlissian or whatever his name is.
Lando
Carlissian, whatever his name is.
Right.
He should have been the hacker at the casino.
He won it from him by playing dice game. Those were the dice.
Okay, because I'm like sitting there going, what? I don't understand that at all.
That's how he won the Falcon.
Okay.
With those dice. And he've always kept it there for good luck.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Because I didn't know what the significant meaning of that dice was.
Fair enough.
Okay.
I really enjoyed the hell out of this film. I had problems with it, but... for me, the good outweighed the bad. I needed to see it a second time to confirm my feelings on this, but there are too many scenes that made me feel that those chills, that epicness. I got that feeling from this film more oftentimes than not, even though there were some scenes I absolutely hated in this. So for me, I'm giving it an 8.5. I really liked it. Greg?
6.5.
I'm going to 8.
Wow.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Well, that puts a little bow on the movies of December. So looking forward here into January, which let's see what's on the horizon, shall we, boys?
What for?
January 5th, we've got Molly's Game.
Actually, that looks interesting.
Yeah. So these are kind of a lot of Oscar hanger-ons that we didn't see. Insidious, The Last Key.
That looks good, dude.
That looks good.
I'm actually shocked that's coming out in January.
Yeah, you may not be once you see it.
Well,
Day of the Dead, Bloodline, that's probably going straight to DVD.
Yeah.
Let's see. Got January 12th, Acts of Violence with Bruce Willis.
I haven't heard of it.
The Post with Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks. I'm not watching that fucking movie.
That's a fluff piece.
Yeah. That's, hey, look how awesome the New York Post is.
Not only that, but like, hey, like, it's kind of like mirrors, like, Nixon's presidency versus Trump's presidency.
It's heavy-handed.
Yeah. It's such a fluff fucking piece, dude.
Paddington 2? I'll see that because I have kids, but I love the first Paddington. It was actually...
Maybe I'll take Mia to see it. I think Mia's ready to
I've seen the trailers for it.
Are we doing the nominations?
Why is he in prison?
Who, Paddington?
Yeah.
I have no idea. Are you serious?
Yeah, he's, like, in fucking prison.
Now I'm even more intrigued.
They like shake
the underground. We're doing a new segment on here coming in next year. Each one of us can nominate one other guy at this table to see one fucking movie, and they gotta see it.
We should all take turns, dude. Like every month, like one person has to basically go take one for the team.
Okay, so it's one guy a month. Whoever speaks up first and nominates that guy, that's how it is, but then that guy is exempt the next month.
Exactly.
Fair enough?
And he picks with someone else or something. We'll figure it out.
January 12th, we've got The Commuter.
They're pushing the shit out of that movie.
I know. I don't fucking get it. Let's see. January 19th, Hostels with
Christian Bale.
Christian Bale.
Oh, it's good.
So there's actually some good movies because they're leftovers from Oscar season.
Yeah.
They're all coming either tomorrow or Monday.
That's January 19th, we've got 12 Strong, which you saw already.
No comment. Okay. I'll comment on it when we
January 26th is Maze Runner to Death Cure. Oh, now, God. I just saw a trailer for this. They made it look great in the trailer, but I'm sure it's going to be shit.
Which one?
Maze Runner to Death Cure.
Yeah. Are they still making those movies?
Is Littlefinger still in those?
Littlefinger? From Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
Kickboxer Retaliation, that's going straight to DVD, there's no doubt. So we got no nominations for this month, huh?
I'll nominate Greg to go see, which one we want to go see?
The Commuter?
There's gotta be more, dude.
I'll find one for Greg.
Or how about we just start this program next month?
Yeah.
Okay. When I preview February, one of us can jump in and throw it out there.
Sure. That works.
So that's it for now, guys. You can follow us on social media at Dragon Star Radio on Instagram, Facebook, wherever else. Download the podcast at iTunes, wherever else you download podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Google Play. Leave us a rating, let us know what you think. We appreciate it as always. This puts a bow on December. And
cheers.
Pretty much
cheers. Happy New Year.